you want. If you've got a question, drop that into the chat and that'll keep us going. So, first from Linda, and I'm going to put an answer for that actually right here. So, here's my link. In the last 6 months, I've noticed my hair starting to thin. Have you tried OneSkin hair serum? I don't know if anyone else feels this way, but in my opinion, OneSkin's website is not as clear as it could be. So, yes, absolutely. So, I've talked about it multiple times. So, many of you remember. So, I am completely 100% natural at this point, but last April 9th, I went from being a dark brunette my whole life, and well, since I was four anyway, and decided I'm totally going gray. Couldn't stand the roots were constantly coming in. I mean, literally, like I could see, and you always see it right around the temples and all the places you don't want anybody to see first. And it was just like, are you kidding me? Every 2 weeks, and I was just like done sitting in a chair for 3 hours. Every 3 to 4 weeks. So I totally sat there for 8 hours and went basically platinum blonde. That's not what I thought was going to happen. And when they said, well, you're done, I'm like, you're leaving it like this. And they're like, if we try to go any further, your hair's going to fall out. So yeah, we're gonna stop right here. I'm like, okay, well, that's a good compromise, I guess. So you all saw I self-inflicted damage, and I knew that it was going to be a dramatic change, but I take that back. I probably thought, no, that's not going to happen to me. Like I probably like it'll be fine. And then it felt great leaving the salon. You know how they do it, and then you go home and wash it yourself, and it's like, oh my God, I just have straw. It's terrible. And so I realized, you know, there is no way I'm gonna go and be able to get any fix for a long time. So that is right at about the time that I had started using OneSkin and been exposed to it. And that in June, I had a kind of a benign mole removed. And while I was waiting for the results, I got really serious about SPF. But I started using the hair serum before anything else. So it was literally from head to toe that I began using all their products and still do to this moment. In fact, I was in New York this weekend and I was like, well, no, I can't be stuck in this snowstorm. I have to get out of here because I have no more OneSkin with me. Like, I'm out. I gotta go home. Never mind that I also needed an estrogen patch today, but there's that. So yes, I have, and I had really done significant damage, and I swear it really helped. So within a few weeks, my hair felt better. Now I did a lot of damage. So definitely the scalp, as things newly started growing, it felt much better than the ends did because I'd done so much damage on them. But and I've got a little lax. Do you know how we do? You know, when you're really in severe and acute pain, you're really diligent and you do it. And I've gotten away from it. And I saw it sitting in my cupboard the other day. And I'm like, why am I not using that? Because it's so helpful. So, sorry, it's way too quiet and somebody's chewing on something. That's never a good sign. Okay. But yes, I love it. And I will continue to use it on a regular basis. I think, you know, like any of us, when you really want to see change, we can kind of dig in and be really diligent for a little while and then kind of fall off the bandwagon when the problem seems to go away. But for uptake sake, I'm still using the SPF and the eye and the face and the body lotion. It's all fantastic. So I would definitely put it in there and suggest try it. It's the only company in the world, and this is going to sound like an infomercial, but it's the best way to talk about what's the distinguishing feature. It's got the OS1 peptide. They're the only people who discovered this. And there's a lot of talk about peptides right now, and whether you think they're good or bad, or they're pretend or they're not. it's been shown in clinical research studies to reverse the biological age of skin. No other skin product can claim that. So, first of all, it's a nice lead in. So, I hope that was helpful. And then I think this is you too, Linda. I'm in week 9 of Stronger 10 is bridge walk, where you lie on your back and a bridge and alternate one leg up and down as if you're walking. It is. Yep. So you're just small steps, really. They're just coming up and down. It doesn't have to be about height. It's just lift, lift, lift. And the point is actually more than about height. It is about you stabilizing the pelvis as you're walking those feet up and down. So not letting it sink, but also not letting it tilt from side to side. And Amy says, when doing Stronger 10, or any of the other stronger programs, should we be varying this squats, I think, foot positions from workout to workout? That is a great question. I think if you personally have the option to do that, you're comfortable in more than one position. Yes. Excuse me. I personally, you'll see me almost always do wide and plie squat. And I think you too will often find there is one where I feel really good, like my biomechanics like this position. And when I do the other one, it feels awkward. And that doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong in the other one. And it doesn't necessarily mean you should try to get better at that one. It could mean it's new to you and maybe you want to continue to try it, but it could also mean that you and your body parts were put together like build the bear, and you've got the same ones, but we all come together a little bit differently. So I feel better rotated out in a plie squat than I do in a parallel squat. Now, when I'm doing a leg press, I can do a, fairly parallel, just a little bit wider than hip width apart, which is what we want, and feel really comfortable with it. But that's different. Your feet are up, you're pushing forward and back. You're not loading it from the top down. So you may have different comfort levels for different kinds of applications of same exercise or same body part kind of movements. So no, not necessarily. If you want to emphasize one thing over the other, and I am weaker externally. My glute medius muscles are weaker. You may want to bring your feet in and keep them close together in a very narrow stance on purpose. If, on the other hand, you want to incorporate more inner thigh adductors, you would rotate out. So think of plie squat like ballet. They're in turnout all the time. You're not dramatically going that far, but it is much more significant than you might want to choose if you have the ability to choose that just on what I do. They're both comfortable. They're equally comfortable for me. So, but again, don't fight your body. Some of us were never going to do the splits because of the way our bodies are put together. We just run into ourselves. And that's not a get out of jail card free because you didn't stretch enough or whatever, but sometimes it's just not meant to be because you're built differently. Some people are naturally built to much more easily be good at developing muscle as if they were going to be a figure competitor or a body builder type of competitor, because their muscles are attached a little bit closer to the joint. If you were attached further down the joint, you're going to have a more longer, leaner look to your muscle and your skeletal system than somebody who naturally has more definition because they've got that insertion right here, just right on this side. And it's going to actually make that muscle pop. So we sometimes are built differently and might be envious that your best friend is, you're doing the workout together. And why is she getting so much more better development? It could be just the difference in the way that your lever lengths are a different size and length, but it's also in where your muscles are attached. We differ from one person to the next, so it won't all be the same. So again, yes, and do the one that is comfortable and you feel really good about. There shouldn't be any pain or discomfort in ankles, knees, or hips if you're doing the squat in your ideal position. So I hope that helps and gives you both latitude to choose any or vary them if you have that, but also not to feel like you should be able to do all of them. That's not necessarily required to get the strength that you want. Nancy says, do you recommend doing a weight workout if you have a cold and are generally tired? I would say no. I would say, kind of leaning into both of them, make sure that you kind of are able to say, my energy is back. I would say that if your cold is here, like shoulders up and not shoulders down, it is safer sooner to begin exercising. And you may actually feel because you create heat from the core out. We're generating that heat from the core out. We're, in a sense, creating a little bit of a fever. We release myokines afterward that are good for the brain, but also good and cytokines for kind of creating a little bit of inflammation after that might be actually healing when you're coming out of it. But you kind of have to know when can I hit that and when is too soon? Because if you start too soon and you're already feeling tired, you're probably going to slow down your recovery process. So my suggestion would be hold off a little bit longer, wait until you've got your energy back. And the energy might be because if you've got a cold, often you don't have your taste buds back. You're potentially not eating really well, so you're probably not getting a great deal of fuel. If you're not sleeping well because your mouth is hanging open at night, don't you hate that? Like literally, yeah, got all that cakey mouth stuff going on. That also not really conducive to putting you in the right place so that you're going to get the benefit from it. So sometimes I like to call the cold or the being ill is the workout. Your body is trying to already recover from that. So focus on just restoring your energy, getting all the rest that you can, and you will probably come back stronger without a stop start ramp, one step forward, two steps back because you overdid it. So I hope that helps you make a decision. In the end, it's, we each have to test and trial. Shanna says, now that I'm starting to lift heavier after staying light for some time, I have bad technique trying to get the heavier dumbbell from next to me on the floor to over my chest is hurting my wrist. Also, don't have a kettlebell, so I use single or two dumbbells, but my grip feels uneven and odd. Is there a method for this? So don't have a kettlebell. So I use a single. So you're either using one heavier one or you're crisscrossing them, right? And so you're holding on to it and it's a little awkward. So those of us with smaller hands, and I am one of those people too, that probably my feel for doing that is just built over years of it is awkward and yet I do it anyway. And if you don't feel safe or you feel vulnerable, I would listen to that very closely and avoid. The other option might be, so if your grip feels uneven and odd, it might help you feel a little more secure if it's sticky, and weightlifting gloves could be helpful that are going to be a little bit more grippy for you in holding on to it. And those, some of them, you can buy them with or without, but some of them come with a little padding that also I know others of you have, I don't want to use the word complained, but you have commented that your hands maybe have a little arthritis and that something pushing on the hand doesn't feel comfortable. So padded gloves can also help with that, but that might be supportive. So the position in and out, coming back to your first part of the question, Shanna, the position in and out of the lift is almost always the more significant thing to watch out for in terms of technique. That's above and beyond, you know, anything that you're going to do once you're in the actual lift is relatively safe, but it is the picking up and the putting down. So when they're beside you, when you say if you're lying down on the floor, and it's probably the most precarious because if you were on a bench, you could sit and reach down, you'd pull them up, and your wrist stays straight. So when, if I can just put this, and I'll try and keep this against a dark background so it's easy to see. So if I hold my wrist like this, and I'm imagining that I'm holding a weight, and I'll hold my cell phone instead. But if I'm holding this like this, my wrist is straight, everything is in alignment, and I feel pretty good. But if I'm reaching down beside me and I'm just kind of like allowing my wrist to really flex, I'm actually straining it. So there's significant strain on that. So we want to train, not strain. And so you might want to put them when you sit down to lie down. Put them in a position where you're actually sitting and right here, where you can put the wrist straight and pick it up, bring it close to your body, and then roll back with it, as opposed to rolling to the side and grabbing it, because you will find that you kind of let go and you've got to paw for a minute, kind of flopping back and forth. So if we can keep it straight, you're going to be much better off. And the other option might be if you've got them lying beside you and you're going to go get it. Go get the one you'll hold in your right hand from the left so you keep it straighter, and go get the one on your right to hold in your left hand. And your grip is going to be much better than trying to come open and pull them together, if that makes sense. Okay. So it's just a little cross the body might be more helpful. And then once you've got them in, realize that the same thing in reverse when you put them down. So what I will often do is when I'm ready to put them down, I'll take them down and kind of put them end to end and drop them that way. So again, the wrist stays straight. So whether we're talking machine weights, even this can be true of, or cable movements, or using tubing or dumbbells, we do tend to cause issues either at the wrist, or sometimes the pain is felt here at the elbow because the muscles in our forearms, we've got muscles here and here on both sides of the forearm, and they act like a pulley. So if I go like this, I've actually pulled on muscles that hold the elbow. And I'm going to mute. I think I'm mute. All right. So if I go either way, I've got this torque. The biggest problem is when we pull and we do this, and we do it unconsciously as if it's we pull and we just want to work a little harder, and we tend to like pull that half inch further, but we do it this way as opposed to just keeping the wrist straight. So it's always important that you have this wrist straight and you're aware of it. The hardest part to do it in, we easily do it in a row. We make that mistake because we can't really sense that we're doing it until something goes wrong with the elbow and we do it. But it's another place, just a good opportunity to mention it right here while we're talking about tension on the wrists from that point. Amy says, Deborah, what do you think of IVs for vitamin C, B vitamins, or other types of IVs? I will tell you that I've used them a couple of times. So I hang out with a really geeky group of people. So a lot of times at conferences, they'll put them in the back of the room. Like you can go get a Myers cocktail or go boost your immunity. But the reason a lot of people are back there in the back of the room doing it is because they stayed out late partying the night before. So I don't usually have that problem. I go to bed and excuse myself. But I have done them when, say, I've got a trip or a conference coming up and I feel like a cold is coming on. And I'm like, are you kidding? You know, so I will go get high vitamin C, or I'll go get a bunch of B vitamins tucked into something just to help boost my immune system. And if nothing else, I'm a big believer of placebo effect. So whether or not it goes into my system, if I think it goes into my system, I am like, I'm down for that. Like, and I'll write you a check for that. And so I'm a believer that, you know, at some point you do everything you can within reason. And, you know, if you know there is some science behind it. I have had to do some IVs for iron, actually. So my iron has always been low, and I have even postmenopause, it's been low, and it's as if, you know, I wasn't holding my own. And we've looked at all the reasons why that might be true and ruled them out. But there've been a physician that I was working with for a little while just said, let's just get this up, you know, because I've had this like unreasonable and unexplainable fatigue. And she's like, well, let's look at your iron levels. And just like, well, no wonder. And so we did it a couple of times. And that kind of made me a believer that, you know, within days, I felt better, you know, when you get the right thing. And so I think mentally, if you get an IV, suddenly you can feel a little bit better, even if for that reason. So do I know that they absolutely work? I think if you could measure your serum levels, your blood levels of certain nutrients afterward, you would see that yes. If you don't go back and do that and do the pre and the post measuring, you don't necessarily know, but you know by feel. So I think that's the way that I would write that if you are contemplating doing it. I'm gonna slide down here. Rebecca said, do you have any recommendations for coenzyme Q10, CoQ10 supplement? My recent blood test recommends it for lowering LDL levels as well as omega-3s. I'm using Nordic Naturals Ultimate Omega with D. Great. And I don't have a brand name for CoQ10, but I would also say anybody here who's on a statin, if you've never been told that, being on a statin depletes your CoQ10. And so, generally, when I've worked with women who are on it, even working in healthcare, they've never been told that by their physician. And, you know, this could be related to the fact that doctors have, you know, almost zero information in medical school on nutrition, but that's kind of a big one that they should know. But I don't have a brand. I do have certain brand names that are reputable, safe, clean that I would highlight. Purine encapsulations, Imogen would be two. So those would be probably two of the top two. Designs for Health might also fall number three. But I would look in those brand names, and you'll probably easily find on Amazon those three. Jane said, in May, I'm going with a group to walk a portion of the Nebraska Cowboy Trail. Who knew there was such a thing? Be walking 10 to 12 miles a day for a week, virtually no heels. Currently, I'm doing Stronger 4 and Monday and Thursday, yoga 2 times a week, HIIT 2 times a week. Do you have any suggestions for preparation? I do. So in May, it'll still be fairly cool. It's May in Nebraska. It could be snowing. So you're probably going to be okay as far as heat goes. Interestingly enough, though, I just did a podcast interview this afternoon with somebody talking about heat resilience, and literally talking about benefits of sauna or hot yoga to help resilience if you have access to a sauna and are inclined. That would be the other thing that I would do is after you're doing a long walk for supporting you. So I would guess, so you don't mention doing any walking. I would guess at some point here you're going to be doing some walking. Are you not doing walking, or did you fail to mention that? Let me know that one. So, for instance, we do the June 3rd through 7th Boulder Retreat. So 90 days out, we start a plan. That will be March 1st. So by next week, I have a weekly total volume that they will all do. And they have a long walk every week and they have a shorter walk every week. And then in between, they have a variety of things as well. So getting time on your feet will be really important. Prepping your feet for, day after day of mileage and prepping for, blisters and being sure that you've got Glide or something on your feet or your toes, and you've got wool socks or Darn Tough socks is a great brand, and that you love, and you've got shoes, and there's nothing new on race day, nothing new on race week. So you've got shoes broken in, socks broken in, you know your ritual, all of those things. And you've had plenty of long walks stacked on top of each other, so you've increased your mileage. But I love the program that you're doing. Yes, the HIIT could or couldn't be. So depending on what it is you're doing, you may be hitting this, but I would always add agility. So no hills, no big deal. But still, agility counts. I always throw it in when we're doing hiking, where we're going to be going up and down for the down. I want them doing quick steps, one, two, three, one, two, three, and being able to move the feet quickly, because you'll come down lighter and your knees and your hips and your lower back will all thank you if you have the ability to do that. The heavier and slower you step on each step, which I know feels potentially counterintuitive if you're worried about your safety, you're thinking, shouldn't I come down slower to be safer? Actually, you're doing more damage with eccentric training when you do it that way. We want you to be light on those feet. We want you to move in small moves and help your eye see the places where you're going to step. And even on those slower walks, if you come into it with a little bit more agility, I think you'll thank yourself for it. And I would just remember, when you are walking and getting in the mileage, that you change your pace and you vary it significantly. So the thing that makes people get stiff and sore while they walk or run, doesn't really matter, is if they hold the same pace, the same gait, the same tempo for the entire time. So when you change it, and that can be because you have a great playlist on, and you have music that makes you want to go, oh, I'm going to move quick to the beat on this one. And then the beat slows down. You will change your gait a little bit and your fascia won't lock up. So you can, if you're running long and it's long for you, it's not compared to any specific mileage. But if you're running long and you're holding the same, you will end up much stiffer than when you started. But if you break your gait up and you go quick and sometimes longer and slower, you will find that you feel far fresher longer, and your lower back, your hips and legs don't lock up. So I would break it up while you're in training, certainly, and follow that through. And I'm going to scroll down and see if you added any answer. Okay, not. All right, but that's kind of exciting. Okay, I'm gonna have to check that out. Amy said Nordic Naturals makes CoQ10. I've used a long time and like it. Thanks for adding that. And I think Linda says I take Ubiquitol by Gerald Formulas, absorb 100 milligrams. I've been taking it for several years and like it. And Shanna answers, makes sense. And that's about the wrists question. Feeling in my elbows too. Okay. And there we go. We'll try those suggestions. Thank you. Feel so sort of uncoordinated with heavy weight off on my side. Yeah. And I don't know, Shanna, that that ever completely goes away, because it is an awkward, it's an awkward move to pull it in like that. But if we are carefully, doing it and gripping it potentially across the side, it may be a little safer. Do you feel like what we were doing in stronger programs also addresses grip strength? It seems like it does. So let me explain what grip strength truly is. Grip strength is a test found to correlate to total body strength. So as you get strong in total body strength, your grip strength improves. So what we're measuring here is not this, the ability to squeeze. What we're measuring is your chest, your back, your legs, your glutes, your quads, are they getting stronger? We will see it reflected in your grip strength. So it is less about, squeezing, holding, although that's can be a piece of it, it's not really the direct link to it. It's just a great test that we've realized this will tell you how you're doing. It's a little bit like the dead hang being a correlation to longevity, depending on how long you can hold it, because that's a measure of your grip strength or your total body strength. And some of us need to work on that one. But sometimes, if you're trying grip strength and you have little hands and you're trying to grip something that's fairly big, that's not going to work. And so that's going to be a limiter. So it's not actually just, if this, you can get on that one single bar. It's not necessarily the same measure for everyone. So it needs to be appropriate for you. But yes, we're improving total body strength, then you will be improving your grip strength and you will therefore be improving your longevity. So another way for you to measure longevity as opposed to grip strength is a 10 rep max. And the reason you're hearing so much about grip strength is because it's easy. It's a $12 or mine was 35. It's probably a little bit more elite, but I have it at home and I can measure it really easily. Whereas if I was going to do a 10 repetition maximum test, I've got to go potentially to a gym where I can find the weights that are literally all I can do is 10. I couldn't do 11. And I'm getting to the point of fatigue at 9 in order to find what that is. And for certain populations, that's not even a wise test to do. But we can have everybody do a grip strength test, and we know the correlation because the data has been collected over time. So it's just a safer one. Hope that was helpful. Okay. Yeah, isn't it? It's like it's a little oddball out there, but it very easy. Okay. So anybody else want to ask another question? So I'm quickly losing my sunlight. I was so pumped. It was so bright out. I'm gonna go into a little brighter room. Right. Anybody else got a question? Linda said in the last 6 months. Oh, that was from the beginning. Sorry about that. Everything just scrolled down. All right. Anybody have a question? Or I'll throw this out there. Anybody here from the membership who would like to hop into a hot seat and just have a little coaching? I'll throw that out there. So we've got a little time left, and we could do just 5 to 8 minutes of coaching, go through your halo assessment, what it is you're doing, what it is you want. If you're in a challenge where you're not quite getting there, or you're not quite sure you're doing exactly what you want for the results that you want, let me know and we'll drop you in here. Amy said, did you learn anything new in the conference this weekend? Oh, gosh, I did. Who did I hear? So, doctor, if she's not actually a doctor, she's an RD. So, Ashley Koff talked a lot about GLP-1s, both from a standpoint of for those who are taking them and for how we generate and produce our own GLP-1s and how we can kick it in. She talked about what a big transition this has been as we've learned about the shot, and for people who are choosing to use the shot versus not use the shot, who are on the shot, who want to transition off the shot.
So I actually ended up talking to a lot of people in the vendor hall, in the expo hall, about, what are ways that we can help people either who don't want to do the shot get some significant results that might be similar or mimic it, and or who want to wean off of it, actually get off of the medication, either because of the cost or negative side effects, but don't want to lose, or don't want to lose the benefits or regain the weight, depending on how you want to say it. So that was definitely an eye-opener. Amy Killen is also somebody who's really kind of been forefront and a pioneer in talking about women's hormones and, how docs are prescribing them. And, the challenge is, at conferences like this, much of the conversation is dedicated toward physicians, and I'm an anomaly in the room. There were a lot of dietitians at this one, but certainly no health and fitness professionals. So I was there to speak on a panel and to engage with physicians about in the ways that exercise is medicine for women in midlife. And, doctors are hungry for it. Zero hands go up in the room when you ask, how many of you had any exercise training, exercise prescription training in medical school? Nobody did. And we should know this because only 12% of doctors had any nutrition, and those that did in that 12%, it was about 2 hours of nutrition in their entire medical school and residency. So unless you've got a physician who, went through, say, a sports medicine program, and we had many at Iowa State when I was instructing. Many of the students that I had were pre-PT or pre-med students. So we know that they're out there. They probably want to be sports or orthopedic surgeons or on the sidelines for sport teams, maybe less so than to help the active public. But all of that was hugely eye-opening, that the time is coming when you're going to get a better exercise prescription from your physician. And I think it's the smartest way for us to go about influencing the world to movement in a better way, because, not everybody exercises or maybe believes or values that they need to. Many still think of it as optional. Not everybody wants to go to the gym or belongs to one, but everybody has a physician. And if we can get physicians to tie movement of the right kind, not based on just position statements and guidelines for people, we will do so much better. Stephanie said I'm up for some coaching. Let me go back because somebody asked about Halo, and let me explain what that is. I will do coaching. So, Halo assessment is, I think we first started talking about this with all of you in January. So the Halo assessment is what we use inside of the membership. We have for years, we just haven't called it this. So it's really a 4-point how we help you choose programs, which one is going to be the most appropriate for you right now. And in fact, it's partially how we screen people about whether or not the program or the membership that you might be looking at is appropriate for you, because we can't serve everyone. If you've got a real, true special need and you should be working with somebody one-on-one, then we want you to be there. So we want the right people in the right places to get the right help. So it's a 4-point looking at your hormones. What's your hormone status right now? If you're pre, you're peri, you're mid-transition, or you're post-menopause, it tells me something about these are priorities for you right now, because we know how much muscle mass someone from early to late stage perimenopause, for instance, can lose. We know in menopause transition, muscle and bone accelerate dramatically. We know what those priorities are. We also know what conflicts exist during those two times as well. We know post-menopause what changes and the increased muscle loss and muscle strength. changing what we need as far as stimulus and how those happen. We need to know your activity age. How much experience do you have? Less than 3 months, 3 to 12, or beyond 12 months? And what are your limitations? For a lot of us, their time or their time and energy, or they're also maybe degeneration on this knee here, or your a little bit of osteoarthritis, maybe it's rheumatoid arthritis for you, fibromyalgia, pre-existing joint issues, about to be a hip replacement, already was a hip replacement. Those things may or may not be limitations, but sometimes we need to know about those. Insomnia would be an example of a limitation. Under a great deal of stress right now, a caregiver, that's a limitation right now, at least at this moment. And then the last one is O, and that's your outcome priorities. You may or may not know that, but for a lot of you, maybe I've just had a DEXA scan and my big priority right now is osteoporosis, or it's a bone health, and I really want to focus on that. So that would be one. We often have more than ones, but it's looking at those in priority. So that's what we discuss when we talk about HALO. And what's left in the middle of that is your sweet spot. That's your sand pile. Because some things have to be eliminated that might exist in one category, but are canceled by another one. So, Amber, you said yes first. I'm going to pull you up and then hang on. I'm going to see. Stephanie, we'll do you second. So we'll do about 6 minutes each. And Lacey, I'm going to answer your question. And Amber, if you want to unmute, go ahead and do that. Lacey said, when I was in the app today, I noticed there's another masterclass added. Did I miss one? You did not. This one was an old one. It is the whole body vibration because we had enough requests for it. And it's such a popular topic that everyone is also asking for the handout repeatedly. So I just pulled that one out. I think it was from 2024. So the masterclass that you see in there, brand new, and it doesn't even have a thumbnail. I just sometimes it's like I could wait till it's pretty perfect, or we could get it there where you have the information and we can make it pretty perfect later. You're usually going to get the latter from me so that we can just act quickly and give you what you need. So that's what's in there. It's about whole body vibration. So whether you have a power plate like I do, or you have another unit, you'll see the value of it, see different ways, and you have a very comprehensive handout in there that I give you so that you can look at whether your goal is bone density, muscle activation, or lymph circulation, what levels you want. So, all right, with that, Amber, are you here and ready?
Yep.
All right, how are you?
Good.
Good. Okay, tell me, do you have a question you want to ask?
I do. So, I was doing really well this fall, walking in the evening right when I got home from work, when it's nice out, and doing the weight training twice a week. But since January, maybe mid of January, all of a sudden, I have hot flashes every night. I cannot sleep. I can't get back to sleep. So it's really like by the time I get home from work, I'm so tired and I'm having a hard time getting up in the morning to do weights, even in the middle of the week, just once. And so I just feel really off. And I'm having a hard time getting back on schedule. Because of my sleep is just so crazy. So I'm just looking for suggestions. I do have an appointment next month with my OB to talk about HRT, but yeah, so
So currently not on HRT.
nope.
Okay. And anything change in regards to diet?
No.
Okay.
I would say no.
Okay. So are you doing dairy, gluten, wheat?
I don't specifically cut out dairy, but I barely eat dairy. I don't drink milk rarely. So I just rarely ever have dairy. But I'm not gluten-free now.
Okay. That my first suggestion might be test that, try remove those. And here's the correlation. So that's probably, Amy asked what else I learned this weekend. Everything is gut biome, microbiome, and the connection between hormonal changes and microbiome is just so tightly woven that what worked for you before may be a challenge. And if you have a mild sensitivity even, and you're in a moment of hot flashes, sometimes eliminating some of those things can be helpful. The other thing, I'm going to throw this out, and it's much more random. It's not the first place we go. The dairy, the gluten, and the wheat is generally the first. But the other one is nightshade vegetables. So tomatoes, peppers, eggplant. So for most of us, it's the tomatoes and the peppers. If those are in many foods that you're eating right now, you might want to try to cut those out, just because nightshades can also be a trigger for women.
Really?
Yeah. Do you have any, do you have low thyroid, or you're taking thyroid med?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. So for any of you who are listening, if that were true, it would definitely be a first thing that I would remove, because often if you have thyroiditis, you're on a thyroid medication, it's because you have low thyroid, not high. And a large percent of you or us have Hashimoto's, and Hashimoto's and nightshades don't do well together. So removing them can sometimes eliminate or reduce hot flushes or night sweats. But I would say, if it was, you know, just that, and you remove them, if you were having them frequently and it made a difference, it's probably worth the effort of just trying it to see if that's helpful at all.
Okay.
And then I would, based on what you're saying, you know, I wouldn't force it. I think try to get as much sunlight early in the day as you can, just to help yourself reset the circadian rhythm as well as you can.
I think I'm gonna, now that you say that, when I get to work, I tend to just be in my office. I'm a nurse and I am with patients, but I think I need to just set like 9 o'clock or a time where I have 15 minutes to go outside. I'm just not out in the sunlight, and it's dark when I leave for work. And so I am definitely missing some sunlight for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially right now, I think while you're struggling with the hot flashes and the night sweats, if there's anything that you can do to improve the creation or production of melatonin and pull that back in, I would definitely try that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I just did not realize, I mean, that sleep, that'll just get you
right like that.
I really enjoy working out, and I am like, oh, I can't even, I'm so tired. I just can't even pull myself out of bed once I fall back to sleep. And anyway.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, I would lean toward the direction of doing less as well. However, trying to just move in small increments. So if you've got, you're giving yourself that 15 minute break, you know, try to do movement while you're out in it. Even 10 minutes of movement, self-selected, not up a sweat, can improve sleep. And, you know, it's not the problem, right? It's not that you can't sleep. It's that the hot flashes are interrupting the sleep. So finding the solution to that might be HRT, but the dietary influence is probably the only thing right now that you've got the greatest control over.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thanks.
Stephanie, do you want to come up? Do you want to unmute?
Okay, I can go on camera too. I think I had it blocked, so I gotta get it back on. Okay.
Blocked me?
There we go. Okay. Whoops.
All right.
So bad. Sorry.
That is okay.
Okay. Bunch of different things I want to ask you.
Okay.
Now, have you?
Fire away.
I want to tell Amber HRT I learned about from you and changed my life. So look into it. And it was from listening to your podcast that opened my eyes and I did more research and it's life changing. So one of my challenges is we travel a lot. We're in an RV and we travel a lot. And so limited space, which I can work, your workouts work within the space, bringing, I right now have a 3, 5, 10, and 15 with me.
Okay.
I'm pretty good about working out regularly, you know, doing strength training, you know, 72 hours apart. So that comes out to 2 or 3 times a week. Then doing, I love yoga. I do yoga, HIIT like twice a week, I'd say. And then put in the like agility, some of those different trainings. It's just a challenge. I don't have a scale with me to know any changes that are happening as far as building muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of that challenge of traveling and getting the best workout.
Mm-hmm.
I am post-menopause, 66 years old, so it's been a while. I guess, yeah, I don't know exactly what the question is, but except that the challenge of, yeah, do I have with me what I should?
Are you reaching muscle fatigue at the end of each set?
Some, depending on the workout or the particular, exercise, it depends. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not.
Okay. So in those instances where you're not, you're using the highest weight that you've got, but you're still not quite reaching fatigue.
Right. Or I feel like if I go from a 5 to a 10, it's like, I can't do a 10, but the 5 isn't enough.
Yeah. Okay. And so you may need either, there's a couple of options. So based on space, if you don't want another full set of dumbbells, they do make these little magnetic kinds of end of weight plates. So if your weights are the metal kind, anyway, that this would work for.
My weights are off marketplace. So it's a whole variety.
Okay.
I built my gym off marketplace.
Okay. Well, check and see. So based on what you've got, look on Amazon to see if those little things, and they're like 2.5 pounds. So it would mean you've got now, you know, on your 5, you've got a 7.5 pound weight that might split the difference between your 5 and your 10. So now you've got a different option.
Okay.
So that might be something that you can look into, and you don't have to buy a full set of dumbbells, you know, then another pair of 8s, generally they would come in 8 would be the next middle range there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we do want you reaching muscle fatigue at the end of each set. So if you're not, you know, that's a good problem. Anybody listening, if you graduated and you've outgrown your waves, that's a good problem. And that's the indication that you are making progress. So we may not be able to measure that muscle in terms of body composition or skeletal muscle mass, but you're seeing it through strength. We know good things are happening. Yeah.
True. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about blood work, getting that done, like a thorough blood work kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I know you've had it done. Like, do you get, if you get it done, obviously not through your doctor's office, but then do they just give you, here's the results, or is there some kind of like, now this is what you should do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The results that you get.
Yeah. And depending, and I've shared a couple of things. So one of them that I use, and I belong to a membership. So it's kind of, you do it at the beginning of the year and you get an opportunity to do it again, like 6 months down the road. And so it's called Function Health. And I shared this link, I think, previously.
But when you get those results back, they are doing a very vivid interpretation. Like, here's what this means. Here's what you might want to do. Here are, whether that is foods that would support this in improving, or micronutrients that you might be low in that they've tested, or, exercise that would improve this kind of rating. So you'll get a really thorough indication of here's steps that you could take, and in both the here's what it is, here's norms, here's optimal, here's you, here's what it means and why it's important and what you can do to change that number.
Okay, that's exactly what I want to know. Okay, so I'll look at that. I'm sure you have it on the website and stuff, so I can look into that. Okay, great, great. Sounds good.
That's it? Okay. Great.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And Sharon asked the question, are the nightshades just related to hot flashes? And sorry, I missed the first part. It's, they are a what I would call an uncommon food sensitivity, Sharon. So they are kind of down the level of, it's not the first place I would go. Generally, it's dairy, gluten, wheat, eggs, and corn, peanuts. Those things would come out first, and we don't. So even when we've done elimination phase diets in the 28-day kickstart, or in January when we did the 4-week reset, we didn't remove nightshades. It's not that we intentionally try to put them in, but if there are peppers or tomatoes in something, we're not consciously keeping them out. It's a like a next layer. And so they are tied to night or hot sweats and hot flashes and night sweats. There we go. But also, food sensitivities can show up in different ways. For midlife women, it tends to be hot flashes, night sweats, but it could show up in other ways, like skin rash, rosacea, or something else could come out of it as a sign or a symptom that that doesn't agree with you. The gastro things, digestion, elimination, bloated gas, those kinds of things could also occur. So it can show up in different ways for different people, certainly. Lori, I don't know if you're seeing this, Stephanie. Lori says, suggestion for Stephanie regarding weights. Have a couple sets of weights, plastic donut you can fill with water. They come with plastic handle and rings that hold the filled donuts in place. Got them on Amazon. Take them in our RV. So there's that. Attach 2 to 4 wrist weights to my dumbbells. Good ideas. And Lori, is that a brand that you put in there, Daris Travel Weights? So just so that you see that, Stephanie, you might want to take a screenshot of all that. So we have a lot of people here in retail therapy that could be very helpful. Okay. All right, everybody. So I think we've taken it just past the hour. Thank you so much for coming up, Amber and Stephanie, for getting coaching and asking questions, and everybody else for contributions as well. And we will put this one up in the replays. Thanks, everybody.